to time certain, please.
Item 337, accept report on the interim results of the Women into Housing Now and Home Start initiatives.
Commissioner Saltzman.
Thank you, Mayor, and good morning, everybody. I'm very pleased today to bring forward for you the results of two very successful initiatives to help get people into housing, led by the Portland Housing Bureau, but also with the support of many of our key providers in our community. The first is the Women into Housing Now program, which was funded through existing Bureau resources. Women experiencing homelessness are especially vulnerable to violence, so it was paramount to increase our efforts to provide safety off the streets. The second program, called Home Start, was funded through the fall bump appropriation. So I want to thank all of you, my colleagues, for your support for that additional funding. And we're going to show you how successful this has been so far. As I said, you'll hear the programs that are funded are demonstrating very promising results. We have a number of speakers today, and we're going to start with Tracy Manning, the Housing Bureau Director, and Sally Erickson. And then we also have County Commissioner Lisa Wimp with us as well.
Good morning. Welcome.
Good morning. Thank you, Commissioner. So I will sort of get you quickly through the stats of how the programs are operating and then get to the interesting part, which is hearing the providers who are actually doing the work. So the first program that we'll talk about is Women into Housing Now. Both of these programs highlight the vulnerable populations identified in our community's plan to end homelessness, Home for Everyone. Women into Housing Now was authorized last fall by Commissioner Saltzman, who requested that we immediately put funds into moving women quickly off the streets and into shelters and permanent homes. That was $300,000 awarded to four of our STAR agencies, Human Solutions, JOIN, Northwest Pilot Project, and Transition Projects. The goal of the program was to house 92 households that included women, which families, women over the age of 55, and chronically homeless women who would maintain housing for a year. At least 70% would maintain housing for a year. They do this by providing street outreach, shelter diversion, meaning somebody calls and says they need shelter, and the shelter's able to get them into home before they need to go to shelter. And then they do, of course, short-term rent assistance, search assistance, and support to stay housed. And as the commissioner referred to, our results so far have been extraordinary. 107 households in the first 6 months, including 26 families with children, 48 individual women, and 33 couples. Both of the programs we're talking about explicitly are trying to represent the address the overrepresentation of communities of color in our homeless population. And so this program in particular has so far served 60% of the people who've been served are from communities of color. 42% were disabled, 10% chronically homeless, and 12 women that were housed are 55 and older. Home Start is the second program that we want to report to you on. This is the name of the program that you funded during the fall bump. Commissioner Saltzman convened with the county a stakeholder advisory group. We've got a number of those stakeholders with us today. Their goal was to identify priorities for rapid rehousing, housing placement of vulnerable individuals and families. And this program really served as the pilot for the governance that we talked to you about last week, A Home for Everyone, and making decisions together, the city, the county, and Home Forward, about who the highest vulnerable, the highest priorities were for housing, regardless of jurisdiction. The committee also really wanted to focus, because these were one-time only funds, on the highest and best use. And so they were able to leverage our existing providers and existing systems to get started immediately with the winter weather approaching, and that group did a fantastic job. So based on the group recommendations, City Council had approved $1.7 million awarded to three agencies, Multnomah County, JOIN Collaborative, and Northwest Pilot Project, and we'll hear more from them soon. And these programs also strove to serve vulnerable adults and families, people with disabilities, people who are age 55 and older. The goal is to house 225 households and have 70% of those remain housed over the course of a year. Similar services provided, but the Home Start program, in addition to specific links to culturally specific services, also focused on some folks with severe mental health needs and aimed to include benefits and employment assistance along with housing. So far, in the first 3 months, Home Start programs assisted 96 households. 76 of those were families with children, 15 individuals and 5 couples. Again, 60% from communities of color, about half females, half males. Of those total served so far, 18% have a disability, 43 are experiencing or have experienced chronic homelessness, and as the gentleman referred to earlier, 15 are veterans, which are also a priority population for folks who are vulnerable on the street in a home for everyone. So what I'd love to do is have Sally Erickson talk a little bit about how these programs fit into our existing system.
So it's really nice to be here today to talk about something that's working really well. You put your faith in our Bureau to invest these funds wisely, and we did that with providers that we know show really effective results in the community. And they include Northwest Pilot Project, Transition Projects, Human Solutions, Latino Network, Native American Rehabilitation Association, JOIN, and all of the providers that Multnomah County works with. And many of those folks are in the audience, and I wonder if I could just ask everybody who's been housed or who serves in those agencies or who is the director of those agencies, just wave your arms in the air.
Good morning.
Thank you all for being here. You often hear from us, but you don't know how many people are every day working to get into housing or helping people find housing and help them stay there. Every year, our Bureau invests in programs that show results. Last year, more than 1,600 households moved from the streets and shelters into permanent housing, and the vast majority are still there. They include women, couples, and families with children. What we did with this investment was what you asked. You asked us to invest in women, and we did that. We helped divert women from coming into shelter, and we helped them move out of shelter and off the streets into permanent homes. And you also asked us to invest in communities of color and to to work with public safety and to work with the police bureau in areas that are hot spots, where police have concerns about people that have been on the street for a really long time, and to partner with them to help move people quickly off the street. We've done that. And what I'd like to do is ask Mark Jolin from JOIN and some of the folks that he's worked with to come up here and join Commissioner Wendt to tell you a little bit more about that. So great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Morning. Morning, Mayor, Commissioners. My name is Mark Jolin. I am the Executive Director at JOIN, and I want to join in thanking you for making this project possible. I'm going to talk a little bit about JOIN's piece of the collaboration, and it really is a collaboration. It is multiple agencies coming together to try to address the needs of some of the identified most vulnerable people in our community. I think Northwest Pilot Project has been mentioned. I want to say that their work here is specifically with very vulnerable homeless seniors, and I think you're going to hear from one of the people who has found housing with their help on this project. Within our collaborative, there are a number of elements. One is a focus on homeless women and specifically trying to help women get off of waiting lists for shelter and into housing or out of shelter, as Sally was mentioning, and that's work the Transition Project has been doing primarily. And important in that is that they're doing some very targeted outreach to both Right to Dream 2 and to Rose Haven to try to make sure that women who may not be coming and seeking services from other providers are getting access to some of this kind of support. within those of us in the collaboration who are serving chronically homeless individuals, very vulnerable people on the street, there are a number of partners in that. Joining Cascadia, and you're going to hear from Leora in just a moment about Cascadia's piece of that, and a little bit more from me about the public safety collaboration. But Central City Concern is a really important partner in that part of this collaboration. They're really trying to make available their deeply subsidized units access to their transitional housing that is alcohol and drug free. We've also been able through them to get access for individuals to their benefits program called BEST, so that folks who need long-term disability benefits in order to sustain their housing placements are able to get that, and also access to their employment programs. Their support employment program is really the most effective program we know of to help long-term folks who haven't been in the labor market, who've been homeless, get reconnected, find work, and the income that they need to sustain their housing. The other important piece that Sally mentioned in this part of the collaboration are specific partnerships with NARA and with the Latino Network. And that is about both, in NARA's case, giving them resources directly so that they can expand the housing work that they're doing with the people in their programs. And in the case of Latino Network, a partnership between JOIN and Latino Network, where we're doing the housing work and Latino Network is doing the ongoing sort of support for the young people that they're working with. And you'll actually hear from one of our outreach workers about one of the families that's been housed with that part of the collaboration. So as I said, serving folks with mental illness is an important piece of this collaboration, and taking the lead on that is Cascadia Behavioral Healthcare, and Leora is here to talk a little more about that.
Hi, thank you, Mayor Hales and the Commissioner. My name is Leora Berry. I'm the Director of the Homeless Services Division over at Cascadia, and our street outreach team has been part of this project. It's a unique population that we're trying to serve. We've taken, working so far, engaged 8 of the individuals from the police referrals, and we have 11 individuals fully engaged in the housing process in 10 households. I'm going to tell you 3 quick stories to kind of draw kind of the lines of what's happening, what we're seeing out there. So the first one is a woman in her 30s, and she was referred to us by the police. She was highly vulnerable. She was out in the snowstorm without shoes, with a wet blanket around her, with active delusions on a pretty much continual basis. She'd been out there for a very long time, and she's continually waiting for a family member to come, which is why she wouldn't leave. Our street outreach worker started going out every single day and connecting her, bringing food, trying to bring her clothing, and started to build some trust. She was then hit by a car later on, ended up in the hospital, and at that point decided that she would be happy to work on housing. And so she was then advocated after the hospital to go into Central City Concern's recuperative care program, where she was there for a month healing from her injuries. We then vouchered her into motel, and we're getting ready to move her into Cascadia Permanent Supportive Housing, which is just a couple blocks away from our wellness program, so she'll get integrated health care services. The other thing about her is that she is trimorbid, so she has major addictions, schizophrenia, and very acute health conditions. Her next person is a young man in his 20s who has schizophrenia, was first homeless when he was 15 in the foster care system, exited out of the foster care system straight into homelessness, and was helped by homeless service providers here locally with the youth system for well over 7 years trying to engage him. He has been housed by a variety of agencies. He's been barred by almost every single organization locally. He just really struggles with the acute symptoms of schizophrenia, and so he's responding to internal stimuli, and that can sometimes lead to some what sounds like verbal aggression, and so he gets kicked out of programs. So we are about to place him with NARA into their supportive housing program, which will offer him culturally specific services, ongoing home visits and supports, integrated health care. He's also miraculously been able to quit heroin while living on the street. So he's quite a story. The last person is a male who's a very large man, and sometimes people may be hesitant to go towards him. He is very, very quiet. And it was very difficult for our clinician to sort out what was going on with him and what sort of symptoms and what he was addressing, because he really doesn't talk very much. But she was able to build a relationship with him because of the love of sci-fi and fantasy world. And that really worked. And so she was able to sort out that he has long history. He's been on the streets here for 5 years. He came from another state where he had a long history of psychiatric institutions as well as a residential program, and he had just kind of taken off. So we're piecing together the story, and the plan is to move him into permanent housing. Again, a person with developmental disabilities as well as schizophrenia, and doesn't acknowledge that he has mental health issues, which is a common theme that we are working through. So these stories kind of highlight the population and what we're looking at. We're working, trying to find people who are suffering with acute mental health symptoms, often that they don't really recognize the symptoms. It's typically psychosis related, often with paranoia and extreme trauma and distrust of the system and service providers. They have co-occurring health issues from cognitive disabilities to major health concerns and addictions. They have extensive histories with homelessness and institutions, repeated housing placements, and about over half of them had been barred from a variety of providers. And they have mental health symptoms that make it very difficult to access the system. Disorganized thought processes, they can't remember appointments, they don't know how to show up. When they get frustrated and scared, they talk in ways that sometimes scare people, even though they may not pose any threat whatsoever. So what we found, what is needed, is intensive hands-on support and trust building, but as quickly as possible to then get them into housing. Almost all of them are going to need permanent supportive housing. They're going to need support for the long time on a volunteer basis where we go into their homes and help engage them and keep them connected up with care. And they need a very low-barrier approach where they're not going to be in trouble if they're using, as long as they're not causing a lot of problems, and they need stabilization housing. Some of the folks we're working with don't know who they are. They don't identify by their name, so they can't sign agreements or paperwork. They don't have IDs. It's very difficult to sort out their histories. And then often, you know, really do what I said before, is they need permanent supportive housing. We're also trying to figure out how to get phones to for those individuals to kind of keep in touch with them, because they often are kind of disappearing. So our street outreach workers are working closely with the police, which have been wonderful, and a variety of other street outreach workers to say, have you seen him? Where is this person? And to stay connected. So it is working. So what's working around this funding is it's very flexible. The police officers have been supportive and coordination, and the partnership has been wonderful and to be able to streamline the access into services. So thank you very much. It is a slow process sometimes. We'd like to be able to get people housed quickly. I'd like it in a week or less, but it's not always the case. So thank you again.
Thank you. Good morning, Commissioner.
Good morning. Thank you for having me. 2 weeks in a row. I won't be back next week.
That's okay with us.
Demonstrating partnership between the city and the county. Good morning, Mayor and Commissioners. I'm Liesl Wendt, Multnomah County Commissioner, and I wanted to come and really, on behalf of the county, thank the City Council and Commissioner Saltzman for the leadership and investing jointly in this issue of homelessness. I think it's a great demonstration of governance, which you voted on last week, of how it is that we can align priorities and leverage resources together. And I should just give you a quick update that the Home Forward Board passed unanimously governance last night, and the county did last week. So we're on to Gresham, but we're into this new phase of work, which is really exciting. One of the pieces kind of on the storytelling line that Leora jumped off, I wanted to share is a couple years ago, my family had taken dinner to the warming center in the middle of winter, and it was packed. It was, you know, people, kids and moms and dads lined up waiting for food in a very small kitchen. My mom, being a good mom, had brought a lot of milk, and the kids were so excited to have milk because they hadn't had it in a long time. And when we left, my dad said, does somebody talk to the kids about what that experience is like? Because it's traumatic to be living in a shelter that's that crowded and that is with people who have lots of other issues going on. And I tell that story because I think this money really gave us the opportunity to invest in going to where families are and helping them get into housing. Maybe they go to the shelter, but for some families, that's not necessarily the best stop along their way to stable and supportive housing. So the county was able to serve 100 families with the resources from the city and build connections to other supports like TANF, like SNAP, workforce and really used an innovative model of insertive engagement and building on family strengths, really acknowledging what is it that they bring to the equation and how is it, what are the resources that they have either within themselves or within their own networks. It's a tremendous team that's working on this mobile housing unit. It takes a special person to do this work, and I think the county and the city are so fortunate with our partners and staff to find people who really get how to do this work successfully. Another piece that we brought to the table was DHS workers. So there's actually two DHS workers here today in the back. Perhaps they can wave. And this is new for DHS to get out of the office with mobile phones and into the community working with Join, working with the other outreach workers so that families don't have to trek to an office to get TANF or SNAP benefits, but can really be part of the team. So we're demonstrating little by little what it looks like to leverage resources most effectively so that families don't have to be outside. And I wanted to both update you and thank you for that partnership, and particularly Commissioner Saltzman and Amy True and Brendan Finn on your staff, who've been tremendous to work with. So thanks for having me.
Questions. Commissioner, do you have any estimate of how many families are still outside?
I don't. It's a really great question, and I'm wondering if perhaps Mary Lee from Multnomah County might want to chime on in, who might have a more real-time estimate for you.
Thank you for your work on this.
Thank you.
And we know that eventually you won't be coming back to the partnership table in this capacity, right. But in whatever capacity, you're always welcome, and once a week is fine, as often as you need.
Thank you very much.
Mary, come on up.
Good morning, Mary Lee, Multnomah County. We operate the warming center that Commissioner Wendt referenced. It is about to close. We operate that. It's no barrier shelter for families with children from November through the end of April. So we are 2 weeks away of closing that shelter. We have two commitments when we open this shelter. One is no family with children is turned away at any point in the winter, needing to get out of the elements, and two is we return none of those families to the street when we close the shelter. Right now, there are approximately 23 to 25 families still in the warming center. The mobile housing team is working night and day to try to house those folks. Potentially, they will not be all placed into permanent housing, as many as possible will be, but no one's going to be returned to the street. We will have them into shelter spaces and other types of temporary situations while we continue to work on placing them in permanent housing. The city dollars and the county dollars are what's making those housing placements possible, along with 6 months of rent assistance to establish stability, and then with the linkage into benefits through DHS and others of our service providers for the long-term support. And our retention numbers for that placement is above 80% 12 months after we've placed folks. And just so you know, of those 25 families, 23 to 25 families, there are 50 children right now in the warming center on any given evening. And that's a low point. We have been close to 80, 90 children in the warming center. So as the weather gets better, people are not using that as a health and safety option. But those children mostly are in school. And I think we have to acknowledge what these families are doing to keep their kids in school, to keep them functioning while they're staying in a shelter that has over 90 people in it. So that's the latest that we need.
Thank you very much.
So I wanted to talk a little bit about the specific collaboration with the Portland Police Bureau that's part of this and the hotspot focus in Lentz and the downtown core. And Officer Chris Jovic, has he arrived by any chance? No, he had hoped to be here. He is the neighborhood response team officer, but because of the shooting last night, I think all the central precinct officers have been called to other duties, so he isn't able to be with us today. And I'm not going to try to speak for him, but I can tell you a little bit about sort of what we've been doing on this side of the collaboration that's really been important for all of us. I think there is a population, and Leora described some of the folks that her outreach workers are engaging. But there are folks in our community who are really struggling. They're sleeping outside. Many of them have been sleeping outside for many years. And for any of a number of reasons, our more facility-based programs haven't been their vehicle off the street, either access issues or just what they need to do in some of those programs to be successful, they're not able to do. And so when Join got into the work of housing homeless folks, it was really to serve that population, because we have lots of good programs And then there were these folks who really weren't connecting well and weren't making that transition back into permanent housing. It's the chronically homeless people who, you know, were out there trying to help. And it has been frustrating over the last several years as the resources, especially at the federal level, haven't increased to try to really connect with those folks and give them the opportunities that they're looking for. And I think it's been frustrating for the chronically homeless folks outside, for sure, but also for the police and for the outreach workers who want nothing more than to be able to help folks get back on their feet and have another opportunity. And so this resource, this partnership with the police has been absolutely an opportunity that we've all gravitated towards, all embraced, because it is the resource we need to be able to help some of those long-term homeless folks in our community make the transition back into housing. And it isn't going to be everyone by any means. It's not enough for that. But I think what's been important is sitting with the police officers who out there every day are seeing folks, understanding their challenges, recognizing that they need services that they can't get. Now giving those resources, putting those resources in place so that Officer Jovic and his partners can call JOIN and say, here is an individual who I'm really worried about. They've been out here. They're camped out here. I see them every day. These are their challenges. Can you help get them into housing, get them the services they need? And now we're in a position to be able to say yes. Our outreach workers are able to go out, engage. Often it's somebody we both know but both haven't been able to help effectively. Now we have some resources to be able to make that happen. The list of that, the list of folks who we're talking about, the number of people who officers are calling us about is well beyond what we're going to be able to serve with this. There are more than 100 referrals that we've received already from officers just in those two areas of folks they would like to see us be able to house. But we're going to stretch these resources as far as we can. House as many people as we possibly can. It's a difficult process. The rental market is tight, as you know. The folks we're talking about have a lot of challenges often. They bring a lot to the table in terms of being able to advocate for themselves and help themselves along, but they need a good amount of both financial investment and staff investment to ultimately be successful. But I think it's been very powerful for us, for our outreach workers, to be directly engaged with officers in this very intentional way. And it's been wonderful to see the officers looking towards real opportunities for the people who they are seeing out there every day and are being asked to move them or respond to problems or complaint calls from the neighbors. The officers are saying, this is great. We actually have a resource that we can call upon to try to do something more proactive and beneficial for the folks who we're seeing out on the street. So it's been great. It's early. This is 3 months into this project, and a lot of the time and energy has gone into building the partnership. But I'm very hopeful about where we're going to continue to see outcomes. So I appreciate very much that we have this opportunity. Our outreach workers appreciate it. I think folks on the street appreciate that there's a resource there. So with that, I want to bring two other people up. One is Cheryl Thompson, who has been able to move into housing with the help of Northwest Pilot Project. The other person I'd like to ask up is Diana Hernandez. She is our JOIN's East County outreach worker. She has been partnering with Latino Network. We'd hoped that Alicia Velasco-Diaz could be here. She has young children, and she wasn't feeling well this morning, so Diana has agreed to come and share. Yes.
Mark, before we get to that, can I just pose a question, and maybe Tracy and her crack team can help us on this. You said that the existing resources don't allow us to meet the demand. And so it's budget time, so being able to quantify what the additional resources would buy us is important. But I think the other way of looking at that is the folks that we're not reaching are going to cost the system a fortune because they are going to be the highest consumers of emergency services. They're going to have other challenges, and we are working. Mayor mentioned the other day that we've gone now 15 months without an officer-involved shooting with someone who was in mental health distress and some, you know, community convulsion. Well, that's because the use of force guidelines changed and because we have mental health outreach workers with our police officers and because mm-hmm. we're changing our approach. But at some point, what I'd like to know is, to meet the demand, what would be the additional resource that you'd need? And conversely, by not meeting that demand, what's the cost that's being externalized throughout the system, if we can make some educated guesses? Because that is sometimes the most compelling way about looking at the investment. We can either put some more money into it, or we can spend a fortune through the ways this gets internalized throughout the city and the county. So At some point, I'd be interested in knowing what that is. We are in budget season, so.
So, and I know that there's good local research now and national research about the sort of cost avoidance of helping chronically homeless people get into housing, including places like the Bud Clark. And I can say that part of what we're working on in terms of this collaboration is really identifying the reduced police contacts for the individuals who are able to help into housing, because we know, and police officers know, that they are being called repeatedly. They're being asked to address problems that really can only be addressed by helping somebody get into housing. And what we expect, and we've had this experience certainly in the past, is that as individuals go into housing, their police contacts, the need for police involvement is going to go down substantially. That's by itself a cost savings. And we also know that as people go into housing, their need for health care declines. And the other challenges they have, they're more successful in engaging all of the social service programs, treatment programs that are available to them. So I don't have any doubt that we're going to see that kind of avoidance, cost avoidance that you're talking about. And we're going to be tracking that at whatever level we can with this particular group of people who are able to help.
And before Cheryl and Diana begin, we have some people who have been placed into housing, like Cheryl, with Northwest Pilot Project, who are here in the audience today, and I know they wanted to show us their keys. So this would be a good time to do that.
Hey. Hey.
Okay, Cheryl.
My name is Cheryl Thompson. I have been employed as an administrative assistant, specialist, coordinator. Been working and taking care of myself since I was about 17 years old, and became a musician back 30 years ago now, and been pretty successful in life. And then who'd have thunk? I get laid off in 2009. I was in Overland Park, Kansas at the time, and spent a year looking for work there, and actually was trying to fill out side of that area and got responses from people here in Portland. And my brother lived here. He's got a terminal illness. I thought, well, this is an opportunity to move there. I had unemployment. I had severance pay, savings. I am disabled because of a spine injury. But I've continued to try to work. But it seems to be not working for me anymore. I haven't been able to just go get a job like I used to. I spent the last 4 years here. I got here in April of 2010, actually, stayed with my brother until he finally decided, couldn't stand the rain anymore, and decided to go to Arizona. So I was still here. I was able to, you know, take care of my needs based on savings and unemployment. Had a couple of temp jobs, but that's been it so far. And now I just want you to see the face of the modern-day homeless person, because this is what ended up happening to me as of last January when my unemployment got cut off and I had no more extensions. The place I was renting, I couldn't afford anymore, and I was, you know, of course, had to leave. Couch surfed with friends. You don't want to wear that out too much. The summer ended up being kind of okay, so I ended up in my car. I was in my car with a lot of other people in their cars. There's places that you can go and kind of have a safety in numbers type of situation, so I didn't ever really feel afraid based on that, but you had to move every 24 hours there. I don't want to name the park because I don't want those people to get in trouble. I also found neighborhoods that I could park and kind of conceal myself at night. And I had shades and clothes I put in the window. And, as it got colder towards September, October, I knew another lady who had a room that I'd house sat for a few years back. And she was getting ready to leave the country and needed a house sitter. So I did that. She didn't pay me because I was living there. But then it got a little hostile because she said, well, I didn't want this to be a permanent situation. You need to find a place. And I was still trying to interview. I mean, I have a wonderful resume. I get calls constantly. I've gone on I don't know how many interviews, but I get the same little note. Well, thank you for your time. You're overqualified. You're not quite what we're looking for. You know, and after a while, you just start getting a little defeated. When I finally got pushed to the point where I was online and found the Northwest Pilot Project, and it took about a month and a half to get in because they only take so many people a day. But finally, I was one of the number. And when I walked in that office and sat down and was telling Jessica my story, and she actually said, yes, we can help you. And then she did. And I've been in a place for about a month now. And I get food stamps. I actually, one of the jobs that I got an interview for was at the food stamp office down in Oregon City. But again, we were really amazed at the caliber of, you know, candidate, but we decided to pick somebody else. And then finally I had to go in and apply for food stamps because, you know, I was like, oh, I got to eat. And I did that, and I cried because I couldn't believe how things turned around so badly, so quickly. And basically I'm here to say, you know, everybody, not everybody, but a large percentage of people are only one paycheck away from being homeless, and I was one unemployment check away from being homeless. I mean, I sustained myself with a little bit of savings, which is pretty much gone now. And I'm still looking for work, still hopeful. I mean, I have a huge amount of self-esteem. I'm known in the music community because I've been successful with that in some instances. I just can't seem to get work there either. Nobody wants to pay. They want you to do it for free. I've done dozens of benefits in the past, and I don't mind doing them now. I just haven't been able to get really plugged in. But when the Rosemont court handed me my key finally, and I was able to walk in and shut the door and kind of let the stress level go down, this last month has really been a total blessing to me. And I tell you, like I say, you hear no, 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 and then finally get a yes. It's life changing. And I'm hoping to, you know, get to a point where I can start sending that resume out again and trying to get back on my feet, because I have, you know, I feel like I still have something to give. I'm not ready to give up on me yet, and I don't think I'm going to anytime soon, because I'm kicking and screaming trying to still to find work. And I know there's, unfortunately, a lot of women in my situation over 55 and, you know, displaced as a worker and disabled and just trying to keep it going. And I used, like I said, I used to be able to get a job whenever I needed one. And now it's like, well, now you're older and you have been unemployed too long, and there's so many restrictions on getting a job now. It doesn't even make sense to me. I'm just really... I never saw this. You know, I didn't plan my retirement well and that kind of thing. So I just figured I'd be working all my life anyway. And now it's like, oh, that's not even an option anymore. I'm starting to feel, I'm hoping that's not going to be true. I believe something's out there. But, yeah, the Northwest Pilot Project, helping women in my situation, was a godsend. And I hope that, you know, these type of programs will continue to be enforced, because I think, you know, you're going to see more and more like me. You know, had a successful career and then got blindsided, basically. But thank you for hearing me.
Thank you very much, Cheryl, for sharing your story.
Thank you.
Good morning. Alicia and her family would have liked to have been here, but I'm thankful to her for allowing me to share her story. I met Alicia through the Latino Network Partnership. And at that time, her and her partner had been engaged with Latino Network, searching for housing. They had been staying with family members off and on. Their only other option was to live on the streets, and that just really wasn't an option for her and her family. They have two young daughters. He's employed. They had the money to make monthly rent. They just couldn't get over the initial costs. And they had found a place they were excited to move into. They just couldn't afford it. And that's when I met them. And with these funds, we were able to make that happen, provide them the initial costs and move into housing. There are still going to be challenges, but with the help of Latino Network and our outreach and retention team, they continue to receive support. And she's very happy to finally have a place of her own for her family to provide stability for her daughters.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you all.
So I think that is the...
I think that wraps...
That is the presentation, yeah. So I don't... If there are any questions, I'm happy to try to answer them or to bring folks back up who can.
Any questions from the council?
I have just one question. I recognize that helping folks with multiple challenges is cost beneficial to the system. Mm-hmm. I'm also wondering if some of the remaining money could be allocated to folks who just need a place to be and who don't have other substance abuse or mental health issues. And that might get us more folks into housing at the same cost as the wraparound services. And I'm just wondering about your thoughts on that.
So I think we've actually got a balance of how this money is being invested. So I think we have got a percentage of it that is going to chronically homeless individuals and folks with severe and persistent mental illness. But another good portion of it is serving women who are on wait lists in shelter, not necessarily because of their vulnerability beyond the fact that they're women, and women are by definition out there and in danger. And then I think we have the flexibility. So this example with Latino Network is a good one. The family really did just need a financial investment, and we have the flexibility with these funds to do that. So I think, again, we're always as a community trying to find that balance between getting the more intensive support services to the folks who really will die on the streets if we don't find a way to support them, and others who really have it all in place. They just need that small bit of support. So I would say right now we have the flexibility, and we are in fact trying to balance that. We never want, if there is someone who walks through the door and has an opportunity to end their homelessness today because they've got a landlord and all they need is a check for $1,000, we're going to find that check for $1,000. Us as an organization to join, and I think across the system, we recognize that we need to capitalize on that, even as we're trying to give the longer-term support to others. There is no easy answer to that, unfortunately, and I don't know. We could certainly break out exactly and share with you sort of how we're seeing the dollars allocated in this particular bump allocation. But for what it's worth, I think we're covering both of those territories to a significant extent.
That's good to hear. Thank you. Is there a single point of contact? Should people come to join it or contact you, or should they try all of the partner agencies?
With respect to
getting housing, if they're able to come to you or to a provider.
So this has not changed on the single side, the sort of points of access. So, folks are coming to join through our outreach team and through the police. Folks are coming to Central City through their regular programs, RCP. They're coming to Northwest Pilot Project through Northwest Pilot Project's intake process. So I think folks wanting to figure out where the best point of access is for them, for this program or any others, are hopefully calling 211 or having a conversation at Bud Clark Commons with one of the intake folks about, okay, this is who I am, these are my resources, where do I go to best get served? On the family side, it's a little different now because one of the innovations in that system is to do coordinated access so that all families who are homeless, whether they're staying in the shelter, in a car, couch surfing, are asked to call 211, there's a brief assessment, and a queue has kind of been created that then the mobile housing team works off of. We don't have yet that kind of single point of entry within the single system.
Okay, that's great. Thank you. And I don't know if we have folks wanting to testify, and then after
I think we do.
I'd like to ask Tracy Manning another question. Okay. Thank you very much. Thank
you for
coming.
All right, let's hear from testimony first, and then get Tracy back up.
We have six people signed up, and the first three, please come on up, are Andy Frazier, Lightning, Stephen J. Entwistle, and they'll be followed by Mike Withy, Charles Johnson, and Angela Hammett.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Council. My name is Stephen Entwistle. I live downtown. I see a lot of homeless people, and I have friends with lots of homeless people. And the timing of this initiative to all of a sudden we're going to start caring about, the women on the street. Where were you 3 months ago on this? Anyway, the timing, the Rose Festival's coming up. And it would not look good if the police were sweeping women and children off the street, you know, right before the Rose Festival. That wouldn't look good for business. It wouldn't look good for the corporate capitalist, society that we have here that's running everything, okay? We should not have this problem to begin with, but we do. I'm not saying it's your fault, okay? But I'm just saying we can do a lot better than this, okay? This is the new normal, okay? We have the second generation of Jim Crow laws, okay, which all of you support, okay? And that affects minorities and poor, homeless, you name it. And that doesn't help people get off the street when you're sweeping people off. They may have just gotten something or got some clothes, got some things that they needed to get done, and the police come and they take it all away, and it's right back to start, you know, again. That's the new normal, okay? That's the normal that we have in Portland. And I was born here. I don't know where you guys are from, but I don't like what's going on. And there's a lot of people that agree with me. And, just to follow the national trends and the other cities and what they're doing with their homeless and how they're doing with business and the Portland Business Alliance, okay, doesn't make any sense to me. You know? I mean, people are ignoring the issues, and that's not good. That's not good. We can do a lot better than that. And I'm looking to do better than that myself. But the new normal. This is the new normal. And Band-Aids for the new normal. That's what we're doing today. Band-Aids for the new normal. That's wrong. You're supporting the wrong people. You're supporting a system that's not working. So anyway, that's all I have to say. Thanks.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning, Mayor Hales, members of the council. I'm Andy Frazier, a co-owner of a small, locally owned small business and the small business chair for the Portland Business Alliance. Before becoming a small business owner and representative, I worked in the social service world. I primarily worked with homeless who suffered from drug and alcohol addiction, paired with manic depression, schizophrenia, bipolar, and who had suicidal tendencies. I worked at a suicide hotline, conducted outreach on the streets, and worked in a home for those in transition. So I want to thank you all first for approving the additional $1.7 million in one-time general fund for the fiscal year 2013-14 last fall to meet the needs of priority populations identified in a home for everyone. And I want to thank Commissioner Saltzman in particular for convening a committee of service providers and others to bring together multiple perspectives and help advise you on the prioritization of these funds. While today's report demonstrates progress, one-time funds are limited in their potential to have significant long-term impact. I hope that we can be even more responsive to ongoing funding requests for additional resources, such as emergency shelter beds to help bridge the gap between homelessness and housing, and for services such as job and skills training that move individuals and families out of the vicious cycle of poverty. Moving forward, I hope that the initial focus on two priority populations, including families and vulnerable adults, can be expanded to include youth experiencing homelessness. And for that one-time investment of $1.7 million, that demonstrates the initial step in ongoing funds and the long-term commitment we need to address homelessness in our community. Thank you again for the opportunity to participate in the Homeless Service Stakeholder Work Group. I look forward to working with you to make our community healthier and more prosperous for everyone.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. I represent Think Lightning Company. My name is Lightning. Commissioner Saltzman, there's one thing I notice about you. Everything you do is very well thought out. From the children's levy to the women into housing now, very effective. This is very effective, and by the data, the results are very impressive. So Everything appears to look really good at this time. One of the key concerns that I have, obviously, is that we'd love to see all these programs expanded. We'd love to see chronic homelessness ended in Portland to where we do have homeless people out there, but they're not chronic homeless. And that can be a reality, but the reality to do that is resources. We need to be able to expand these programs. We need to have more money coming into these programs. And we need to decrease the chronic homelessness population, plain and simple. We can't allow it to increase. We need to watch real close on the loans being given out through the Portland Housing Bureau. We need to make sure that we recover the amount being loaned out in a reasonable interest rate. We do not want to make loans in 3 years down the line if they're not making the payment, call it a grant, and don't worry about it. We have a tremendous amount of money that is out there being utilized. If we were to use it more efficiently, and Commissioner Salzman is showing that he definitely has the ability to do that. I also understand you own properties. There's nobody that understands housing better than someone that owns a house or a multifamily unit. They understand everything about it. And the reality is it comes down to being more efficient, managing the money better, and making sure that the results are such as this program here are very positive. So again, from my position, we need to make sure we start watching these loans. We need to make sure that the people we're loaning money to have the ability to pay these loans back, and we need to set a culture that says, look, this is for the homeless. If we don't have that funding down the line, we create more chronic homelessness in this city, and that's what happens. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else? Carl?
Yes, the next three are Mike Withy, Charles Johnson, and Angela Hammett.
Good morning.
Good morning. My name's Angela Hammett. I'm here representing myself. I can't believe that this all fell on the exact moment of time that I need to discuss this with you. I have been homeless for over a year and a half. I have been in a women's shelter for the past 3 months. Human Solution has picked my daughter and I up, and they're going to help us with 6 months' worth of rent. To give us a second chance. I found the most wonderful apartment. We both fell in love with it. We passed the screening except for the criminal record. The criminal record, which is largely due to my being homelessness. I mean, I wouldn't have been in those situations if I'd had a home I could be in. So it's a vicious cycle of, you know, that I didn't hear anything. I came in late because I was at that apartment pleading with them to for help. So I'm here asking you right now if you would please, whatever you can do to help them overlook, get past that criminal. I've worked all my life. I've never been homeless before. Just, things happened. Here I am. I've been fighting through a broken leg. The police have given me. I have post-traumatic stress disorder from them. Those things that did happen was because of that. You know, they came at me aggressively, and boom, it just happens. I want this place more than I can. I just need help. I need help. I need a recommendation. I need something to overlook this. I can send you emails about what the incidents were and an explanation of them.
Was there a staff from the Human Solutions with you when you went to the apartment?
Yes, and I have his email here if you'd like it, so you can just...
That person's going to help you with advocating with the landlord? I'm pleased to hear that you've got this step, so I'll be hoping.
Yes, and thank you so much.
Good. Thank you. Good luck. And there's some folks here in the room that might be able to help as well.
Thank you.
Michael?
Good morning. I'd like to thank you guys. I'm not here to rail you. I think that this is a good first move. The one thing that I'm concerned about is the future funding for low-income housing. I think that we have a history in Portland of dealing with the homeless issue in a way that is not very efficient as far as the way we're spending our money, the large buildings that we're spending our money on. I think we're helping a lot of people, few people, and a lot of people are being left out. I keep coming back to the Bud Clark Commons because it's just a perfect example of what we really should not be doing. Outside of this room is some renderings, some poster boards of the eco communities that we've talked about building. We were in St. John's at the St. John's Neighborhood Association to go ahead and introduce these to them. They're all very excited about it. People in Lentz, their neighborhood association, is very excited about it. So in the future, if there's going to be large sums of money put towards big building projects, we should look at Rob Justice, Home First Development. Again, I keep mentioning him because he co-founded JOIN. And he sees the need to bring about a solution to homelessness that's going to reach the masses and not just a few, like, again, Bud Clark Commons, where we have 130 units that cost $280,000 each. And they never have to get a job. They never have to leave there. That's a guaranteed lifetime of free rent, and it's supposed to be a transitional housing situation. So you guys might want to consider talking to them at Bud Clark Commons and changing their policy. If they have 130 apartments, it should be transitional housing, not permanent housing for them. Okay, that's about it.
Thank you, Michael. Thanks. Good morning, Charles.
Good morning, Mr. Mayor, Commissioners. My name is Charles Johnson, and I want to thank Amanda Fritz for her question, which kind of moved this little episode we've had here from simply public relations and patting each other on the back to real numbers and real concerns. Ms. Fritz asked a question along the lines of, if we help one severely needy multiple issue person and leave nine other people on the street, do we really save any money? And I know that's a difficult question. I know that Mr. Saltzman and Mr. Fish are coming up for election. I don't know if they've turned in their statement in the voter's guide, but perhaps the best thing for them to put in their voter guide statement is, call Ron Wyden, call Jeff Merkley, and make them send us the money. The situation, we had a gentleman here from the Portland Business Alliance, and it was one of their more mild conversations, but I really hope that they would actually raise the point that while we're helping anecdotally a small percentage of the people who are in need, a small percentage of the people who are in the doorways and on the sidewalks of this city, that money is not really addressing the concern of the Portland Business Alliance. It's not removing, or even, we don't even know statistically how well it's impacting the number of people on the street. And even though we've talked about moving a lot of money around here, we haven't really talked in a way, at least during this brief presentation, that sounds like serious people. We haven't talked about percentages and real effectiveness. Twice a year, we say, oh yeah, let's go count the homeless. But we don't really have any high public reporting about, there's that same person who's been sleeping on 3rd Avenue next to the World, one block from the World Trade Center, sorry, it'd be 2nd Avenue. And there's a woman there, and then they put up some chain link fences, and now she's gone. Or we took public resources and put up some fancy police caution tape and some white barricades under the Burnside Bridge, and now Erica in the wheelchair can't sleep there anymore. But I guarantee you she's not housed inside because I see her on other intersections. So certainly this program to help, you know, I'm very glad that the women and people who are getting helped are being helped, but it doesn't diminish the fact that you need emergency shelter in addition to transitional and permanent housing. You need to come up with a plan to take everybody. I'm sure that even though if those people are drunk or on meth or on heroin, some of them are cooperative enough to go into shelter beds if you would make those shelter beds happen. Perhaps the Portland Business Alliance would even have money for a program like that instead of just having security people push people around. I'll also be talking to you about how much rent you collect for renting the parking lot under the Burnside Bridge. It's very interesting when you go to your Portland maps run by the city GIS that I can find out that the White Stag block is only rented by the university and that there's two landlords in there. But it's been the focus of such police attention and the site where you arrested Ibrahim Mubarak. I will be coming around maybe to Steve Novick's, probably the most helpful person up there. Sorry, Amanda. In this regard, because it deals with a parking lot under the Multnomah County managed bridge that's policed by